Welcome to the third episode of Lessons from Award-Winning Publisher Podcasts. In March 2020, the Media Voices team held the Publisher Podcast Awards in London. And in this series, we are asking the publishers who won those awards to talk about launching their podcasts, the evolution of their shows, how they produce them consistently, and how they make money. I'm Peter Houston, and in this episode, I'll be learning from Catherine Wells, executive producer at The Atlantic. She's talking about the winner of her technology category and her publisher podcast of the year, The Atlantic's Crazy Genius. Crazy Genius is different from the pilot TV and DigiDay podcasts that we featured in episodes 1 and 2 of this series. It's a narrative podcast, with each season made up of 7 or 8 episodes focused on a single theme from the world of tech and culture. The first thing I wanted to find out from executive producer Catherine Wells was where the idea for Crazy Genius came from.
The idea was basically Derek's a great communicator, and Derek Thompson, the host, he's a great communicator and a great speaker. He had an interest in podcasting, and The Atlantic as an institution was interested in developing more podcasts, in part because we know that there are people who consume journalism through podcasts as their primary source. This is a different way to reach potential audiences. Those were the basic ideas. And then we went through development and just thinking about, okay, well, what, given that we know that we want to develop more podcasts and we know that Derek has an interest and is, a great speaker, so we know he would be great for this, what does the podcast look like? How do we make it sound and feel like us?
Crazy Genius host Derek Thompson is a staff writer at The Atlantic, and I wondered if it was common for podcast ideas to start with writers or editors.
Yeah, I think a lot of the energy at The Atlantic has come from writers themselves or staff members who just are really interested in, who listen to podcasts and who want to do them themselves. I talk to people all the time about their ideas, and people reach out through their editors. And there are lots more podcasts that we want to make. We've just grown, sort of deliberately and slowly, but there are so many podcasts that we'd love to make.
Catherine used the example of a new Atlantic podcast to illustrate an editorial-led development process. Floodlines, hosted by staff writer Van R. Newkirk, revisits the impact of the flooding in New Orleans that followed Hurricane Katrina.
Floodlines, which came out in March, was our first reported narrative series, multi-part single story. And we knew we wanted to do that kind of format because The Atlantic is known for its long-form, ideas-driven journalism. So we knew, that would be a natural fit in terms of format. And then I was having a series of conversations with people in the newsroom, which I often do, and had been talking with Van about several ideas, and then he presented this one to me, and I thought not only would that work really well for this medium, but it's, a story that, although there has been much great journalism and research around the event, it is such a seminal American catastrophe that we knew there was more to explore, especially within the context of what's going on now and with the hindsight of now. We were interested in talking especially about the aftermath, what happens, how trauma of these catastrophes linger for decades afterwards.
Crazy Genius and Floodlines have a narrative format in common. Does an Atlantic podcast have to be a storytelling podcast?
I think we are really open to all formats, and I'd love to do more of everything. I do think, something we offer that's unique is the combination of stories and ideas. That's something that The Atlantic and magazine journalism is particularly good at. So I would say that story is important, but we have a lot of ideas-driven content too, which is more conversational in nature.
With ideas coming from the newsroom, I wondered how Catherine was planning and producing new podcasts.
Well, we still have a pretty small team. it's me and two producers, and we've worked with producers on project-based things, but we've actually moved, tried to move somewhat deliberately just to preserve the kind of identity and quality of that The Atlantic is known for in other mediums. But yeah, we definitely, I mean, when I joined, we had one roundtable podcast called Radio Atlantic. And in the years since, we've launched, let's see, 4 new podcasts, and we'll have a 5th coming this fall.
The plans for growing The Atlantic's podcast portfolio sound very measured, but one of those new podcasts is Social Distance, a show conceived and launched in less than 24 hours and now on episode 84.
Social Distance is a unique case. It's no longer daily, but it did start out as daily. That one was, I would say, unusual among our podcasts in that all of our other podcasts, we've thought about them beforehand, and there was sort of a long process leading up to. And that one, between the idea and the first podcast being published, was about 24 hours. I'm kind of amazed that we're still doing it and that it seemed to be useful to the audience because we, you know, did it so quickly. But it was kind of in response to, of course, the pandemic becoming so urgent so quickly in the U.S. at least. And we knew it was important to cover, and a lot of it was kind of just personal to me because I thought I had been working on Floodlines for the last year, you know, and we published it on March 12th, and then New York was going into lockdown. And so I just had a lot of information I wanted, and I figured if I need all of this information, maybe someone else does too. So we'll just record these conversations and publish them. So that is not usually how we do podcasts, for sure.
I had to ask, how do you judge success on a project conceived and launched in less than 24 hours?
That one was interesting because I don't even think we had like specific expectations for it at the beginning, that it would continue any amount of time or that it would, you know, we didn't have specific goals because really it was very like, this is an incredibly overwhelming moment and there's so much information that we need to process right now. Things are changing so quickly that, you know, we need a space to talk this out. And we hope that it is useful to people, but we're going to be doing this anyway. If it didn't seem useful to anyone, we would have stopped earlier. You know, we would have just done it for a little while and then closed it out. But we're still doing it now, however many months later, because it actually has gotten a really gratifying response from listeners. You know, we did daily for a while, and I think especially in those early days of confusion and isolation, people seemed to respond and feel that it was kind of a friendly voices once a day was helpful, and it was helpful to me just making it to have, you know, okay, every day I'm going to talk to Jim and at least I know that's going to happen. Everything else is confusing, but I know that will happen.
Going back to those more involved, reported, narrative podcast series, I ask Catherine, how are those planned and put together?
You know, I would say the beginning is just kind of a kernel of an idea often, and then we have many conversations and sometimes write things up, you know, documents up of, okay, well, this is what we hope this podcast will do, you know, for people. This is who we imagine might listen and who might need or want this information in this format. These are examples of the kinds of stories or interviews we might do. And, you know, here's how long we think it'll take to do it. For Crazy Genius, for instance, we brought on one or two producers for that project each season to help us make it. So, you know, there's a bit of time in staffing up too. And then for seasonal shows, you know, you estimate how long you think it's going to take to make it. You set a date, you work backwards from that and build out a production schedule.
And is every episode finished by the time the season launches?
Floodlines was published all at once because it was a single story. But Crazy Genius, we knew what the topics were going to be, basically. And we had done most of the reporting, but they weren't actually finished. When we started publishing, we were working throughout the season.
When staff writers take on hosting, is there any specific training they need to make the shift to podcasting?
The basics of podcasting are the same as any basics of journalism. You know, it's like, do you have ideas? Are you curious? Do you want to talk to people? And then can you synthesize what you learn for an audience? It's really not on any fundamental level that different. There are some techniques, obviously, that are different in that this is talking, not writing. And I think there are real differences in both how you interview someone for a print piece as opposed to an audio piece, and how you write, you know, and how you structure that story. So we usually do at least a little bit of a techniques discussion or training beforehand, before we get started, just to say, here are the things that are different in between writing and podcasts. So these are the things that are going to feel weird and unnatural that your producer may ask you to do. And this is why we'll be asking you to do that.
What exactly feels weird and unnatural for writers making a podcast?
The writers would be best at describing this, but what I've heard them say is often in a print interview, you are, you know, you're having more of an informational conversation where you are looking for information from them. They know that you know things already. And so the conversation is really just between you and that person. And then you, in your writing, explain the additional context that the audience will need to know. But if you really want to rely on your tape in a podcast and not have to narrate through a bunch of stuff, you need to interview as if there is a third person in the room who doesn't know what either of you are talking about. So you have to have your conversation, but anytime there is shared knowledge that we assume the audience would not have, you say it out loud. You know, just say it out loud, even though it's just the two of you having the conversation and you both know you know this thing. Say it out loud, just so you're including the audience in that conversation.
Speaking of audiences, is the Atlantic podcast listener also an Atlantic reader?
I don't think it's our expectation that our podcast listeners are only coming from other parts of the Atlantic. I think, you know, there may very well be listeners who don't read the Atlantic in text, you know, who are really podcast fans and stumble upon us in audio only, and then they're becoming introduced to the Atlantic through the podcast, actually. I think there are a lot of ways that people can find what we do, and we definitely want our existing audience to know that there are, you know, there are other ways to listen to our journalism, but we promote outside of our own properties as well to podcast audiences specifically.
Wherever listeners come from, Catherine says it's important to make sure they understand that what they're listening to comes from the Atlantic.
We want to make clear to audiences that this is an Atlantic story. But I'll say that the Atlantic is full of writers with many different styles and ideas. I think our brand is less about a specific style or philosophy and more, you know, if you come to the Atlantic for any type of journalism, you know you're getting something very high quality of the highest sort of journalistic standards and craft, and that it will be about something that matters. My own feeling is that I just want to make journalism that is helpful and informational and compelling to people. And I don't think we are making them necessarily for, you know, some sort of imaginary Atlantic reader. I think we're trying to make journalism that feels important and compelling and well suited to the medium. And if we do that well, then the audience will be there.
And finally, I ask Catherine, how does the Atlantic monetize that audience?
That is not my area of expertise, and I'm glad to work at an institution where our decisions are really driven by our editorial mission, and then sort of figuring out the money comes after we decide what we need to do. But, I mean, there are ads on the podcasts. We do pre-rolls, mid-rolls, and post-rolls. We also, within Floodlines, because it was, you know, such a carefully crafted experience, we also promoted a subscription to The Atlantic. You know, if you like this, then you will like The Atlantic, and you'll get a lot of reward about from being a subscriber to all of our journalism. So we do that. We don't do host reads as a rule, but for some, like for Crazy Genius, we did some host reads. It's kind of a bit of a case-by-case situation, depending on the context.
So, lots to learn from the Atlantic's approach to podcasting. My big lessons from talking to Catherine were, talk to your writers and editors for new podcast ideas. Podcast journalism and print journalism share the same basics, but train writers to be talkers. Train them to say it out loud. Be deliberate in your podcast planning to keep your podcast quality in line with the rest of your output. But don't be scared to rush podcast projects out if the circumstances call for it. And keep shows running if the audience responds positively, but again, don't be scared to kill your shows if they don't deliver. And last but not least, your listeners aren't necessarily readers, but you should make your brand values clear and consistent. As always, a great big Media Voices thank you to Catherine Wells for sharing her podcasting insights. In the next episode in this lesson series, I'll be learning from Dave Musgrove, publisher and podcast host at Immediate Media's History Extra. Entries for the 2020 Publisher Podcast Awards are now open. For more information on this year's expanded category lineup and to find out how to enter your podcast, have a look at publisherpodcastawards.com.